skeletal forms burn toxic green. Vacant eyes lit with everlasting hellfire.
Welcome to our 1 year anniversary episode of Let's Watch Scary Movies. We are your horror hosts.
I am Jenny.
And I am Caitlin.
We made it, guys.
We made it to a whole year.
We made it to a whole year.
Despite a lot of procrastination, rescheduling of things.
Computer issues,
tech issues, in the face of all adversity, we're here.
Yeah, we've recorded in different countries, in different time zones.
Together.
Yep.
Next to each other, yep. Across the room, during a pandemic. And yet, here we are.
We did it.
We did it! Happy anniversary!
Happy anniversary! We obviously have a drink to celebrate.
Yes, cheers.
Cheers. With ASMR.
Ooh.
Mmm.
And a super quick shout out to some people who've been with us on part of the journey or on all of the journey. So massive shout out to Ghoul Realm Art, for example.
Yes.
Lending us or creating for us such amazing artwork.
Yep, our logo.
Thank you, Andy Segals. Thank you also briefly to Matthew Burles,
yes,
who helped us for a while with our editing and showed us the way of editing.
He's been an absolute superstar.
Yeah. Thank you. And then as well, of course, to the Brothers Keg, whose music we were actually listening to earlier just because we love it.
Yep.
And giving us our banging theme music. It's honestly the best theme music I could have ever dreamt of to go for our with our podcast. So
I think that for a long time we were just like, well, what would we have as the theme?
Yeah.
And that's what held us back.
But it's got to be something like fucking badass, but also dramatic.
Yep.
And also like horror-esque, and it hits all of
it's
those
perfect
things. So for those of you who don't know the Brothers Keg, definitely check them out. I'd say they're like doom rock, but I don't know the actual term for it because I'm not cool, but they're just a great band. So thank you, Tom Fife. Thank you, APF Records. Thank you, the Brothers Keg. Check them out, guys. So here we are. And not only is it our anniversary episode, but it is also the lead up to Halloween.
Yes. It's our first episode in our, yeah, I'll run up to Halloween.
Our favorite time of year. The pumpkin spice candles are out.
Yep. I've had more than one pumpkin spice based iced coffee in the last week.
I've made chili.
Yeah.
Because the weather's starting to turn a little bit cold. So, but we won't talk too much about that because it makes me really sad.
Summer is still kind of here. I mean, we're still being in shorts
and
t-shirt
all day. Yeah. It's nice.
We're okay.
But, you know, it's actually being a Florida person, I've said before, I really appreciate the changing of the seasons because you never really have that. You just have hot, hotter, hottest, slightly less humid. That's pretty much your three or your four seasons.
Which one is slightly less humid?
Like winter. It's still hot. It's still like 70s, whatever that is in Celsius. And maybe you might go down at night to like 60s or even high 50s and then everyone freaks out and lights a fire and gets out there best sweatshirts and socks and shoes instead of their sandals. You know, that's pretty much the extent of it. Sometimes it gets a little chilly, but that's all. So as a person who comes from that, who never even owned a scarf, a hat, or a coat in my whole life until I was 26 and moved to England, I appreciate the changing of the seasons, actually. So once I let go of the summer, I will fully embrace the autumn. But yes, that brings with it Halloween, which is one of my favorite times of year. Love Halloween. Obviously here at the podcast, Halloween's a big deal for us because
every day is Halloween for us.
Every day is Halloween, but also Halloween time for the rest of the world. It's like they all join our love.
Yeah, everyone.
Of Halloween. Like, thanks, guys. Welcome.
We're not the weirdos anymore.
Yeah. We're all in this together.
Well, I mean, we are, but just for other reasons.
Yeah. And more horror movies come out.
Yeah.
It's more acceptable to watch horror movies.
Yep.
Everyone wants
it's
to watch
easier.
Horror movies. You have people to watch them with.
All the shops have Halloween products in, which means I get to decorate, you know, my house.
I can put skeletons everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I buy all my actual house decor in the Halloween sections in shops, so it's great.
I love it.
Stock
it's
up.
True, you do.
Yeah. I have already got like a stash of Halloween themed candles.
Yeah, same. They each one has its own kind of month and like scent. Because I'm crazy. I want to take you on an adventure of aroma. Aromaventure.
Aromaventure with Caitlin.
Yeah. I want you to walk in and the hallway smells like one thing. The bathroom something else. The bedroom a third thing. And the sitting room a whole different adventure for the nose. So please enter my aromaventure. Eyes closed. Nose open. It's like Dollywood, but better.
It is. giant nostrils instead of giant tits.
That's going on all the branding. Thank you for your idea. I appreciate your marketing input.
Always. What merch shall we have, guys?
Yeah, we do need some merch. It is being requested. We have posted some photos from our most recent photo shoot, and we have amazing Let's Watch Scary Movie shirts, which actually helped inspire the name of the podcast.
Yep. We were called something else.
We were called many things, actually.
We released an episode under a different name. Or we recorded anyway.
Yeah, we recorded two under the other name. Yeah. I don't know. I'll have to find them.
I can't remember what we were called, but then we realized somebody else had a podcast under that name.
We're like the artists formerly known as, and then that's the podcast.
Before anyone actually knew who we were.
Does anyone still know who we are? It's just me and you. We're our own number one fans.
We are. No, like Sam. Sam messaged me earlier saying she's caught up. She's
Thank
up
you,
to date.
Sam.
Andy is up to date.
Jenny's husband.
Yeah, but he doesn't listen to them with me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because like he listens to them.
I think my friend Crystal listens to them. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That's it from my side. No one in my family.
No. My dad listened to one episode and I was like, he told me afterwards and I was like, oh God. That was exactly my response. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, sometimes the conversation goes into sort of non-parental territory. So yeah. I'm not too bothered that my parents aren't avid listeners.
Yeah.
Although, you know, you can ask your Alexa. Sorry to everyone's that I just turned on by mentioning that name. Alexa, place Let's Watch Scary Movies, and she'll do it.
Yeah.
Should I demonstrate?
Yeah.
Scary films from Fire TV.
Nope.
Alexa,
play the podcast Let's Watch Scary Movies.
Here's Let's Watch Scary Movies from Amazon Music. Here's season 1, episode 32. Episode 32, The Slumber Party Massacre, 1982. Two thumbs up for the 80s boobs.
Alexa, stop. See, folks, there you go. There you have it. It's as easy as that, and I'm sure you can ask your Google one too.
In case you haven't noticed by the fact that we're like however many minutes in and we're shouting to Alexa, we decided to have a celebratory.
A celebratory shot.
Yeah, of some Jaeger that was left over from my birthday shenanigans.
When you drink, Jaeger makes your shitty steak.
I am leaving that in. I am absolutely leaving that
no.
in. Yeah, it makes you...
It's going so well. Well, having said all of that, and it teaching you how to use your... We decided that these episodes would be made up of our favorite horror films, so it seems like it's time. It's time for us to talk about The Exorcist.
It's time, finally. It's taken a year.
It's taken a year, but good things come to those who wait.
Yes.
And other such cliches like, don't do today what you can leave off till tomorrow. Yep. Words to live by. So... Jenny loves The Exorcist, as do I. We all love The Exorcist, right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't know why, but when I was writing about The Exorcist, I wrote 84% LOL. I think that's its score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
But that's just a guess. So the first part of my notes, I will admit, straight out the gate, are not as thorough or...
Coherent
as they should be. And again, we
did come home after going out with our friend, and
which we mentioned
in the last episode. And when we came home after that evening, we thought we'd be good podcasters and watch our film and write all of our notes in advance. But all that happened was we got 20 minutes in, our notes became absolute drivel, and we just fell asleep.
It was time for bed. It was a solid 8 hours of drinking and it was time for bed.
Yeah, and we are not in our 20s anymore.
Unless you think that all we do is drink, it's just not true.
Only when we're together.
Only when we're together. And then also when we're apart. But mainly when we're together. So, The Exorcist, 1973, 2 hours and 12 minutes, Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay, also nominated for something like 10 Academy Awards, often considered the highest grossing and most successful horror film of all time.
My favorite.
William Friedkin directed, based on the screenplay by William Peter Blatty, The Exorcist. So, I mean, we always give a spoiler-free, our spoiler-free thoughts at the top.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, everybody knows what The Exorcist is. If you don't, and yet you're listening to this podcast, I'm a bit confused.
Pause it here. Go and watch the film.
Yeah.
It is, I will say, it is an older film. It is from the 70s, and it is absolutely a slow burn. But this is one where you have a guarantee of a payoff at the end, and it's worth it.
Yes.
It is a fully character-driven storyline, and that serves it so well.
Yeah.
Because, yes, the good acting and the really decent, really quite good effects, there's icing on the cake of what is a really well-told story with some super scary, distressing, disturbing moments.
Yeah, and incredible acting.
Incredible acting. Regan, Linda Blair, who plays Regan, Ellen Bernstein, who plays Chris, the guy who plays Father Karras, I can't remember his name, all three were nominated for Academy Awards for this movie. Which was just unheard of.
Yeah.
So, not only does the Academy sort of lend it some legitimacy, which I don't think is necessary, but it's nice. It's nice to be acknowledged. I think not very often horror films are overlooked based simply on the fact that they are horror films. So, for this, it kind of got its due. And, I mean, Ellen Bernstein is an incredible actress. I think she also won an Academy Award for Requiem for a Dream. She's just incredible.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing actress. So, I just believe her in this. And then even, like, Linda Blair, I know she was young, and I think there were kind of issues after the film.
Yeah, yeah,
We've touched on it.
Things got bad for her for a little while.
But just incredible, yeah, all around. So, I mean, for me, it's super easy to score this film. Like, to me, it's epitomizes something that you would give 5.
Yep.
Crucifixes to.
I've got 5 upside down crucifixes just 5. Because I drew them upside down.
Yes.
Yours have turned Egyptian and turned into Ankhs.
They have, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They started out, they looked like pluses, and then I thought I would improve them.
Things have been going well for us.
Things have been going so good. I'm a really good artist.
This Literally. Is, and you know, sometimes I'm like, I don't know why I couldn't score this a 5, because there's nothing I can think I can change. It's just that those films don't live up to The Exorcist to me.
Is The Exorcist the film that you judge all things by?
I think so.
Danger, danger. But super fascinating that that's what you do. And I get it, because in my mind, I sometimes do that with Rosemary's Baby, for example.
Yeah.
Like, because there are parts of it, like the ability to watch it over and over. I think we both said at the top of The Exorcist, though, this is not something that we dip into frequently.
No.
Because it will lose what makes it so terrifying. If you watch it too much, I feel like it might diminish it. It might not, but I've just never...
I don't want to test that.
I don't want to find out. Yeah. Because every time I watch it, I do have to commit. I've got to sit down. I've got to pay attention because it is long and it is a slow burn, but it's always worth it. I'm always glad I did, that I spent time in that world. I mean, it's iconic.
It's just perfect. And when we put it on last night and I was a bit like, tired and things, and so you have to commit to it, and I was like, oh no, and I'm like, oh god, no, this has it happened, have I finally become jaded with The Exorcist? And then when we started watching it today, I was like, no, this is still absolutely terrifying.
It stands, yeah,
everything. There isn't a thing I would change about it.
I really don't think that I would either. And I think, having read the source material, because I have read the book, it was quite some time ago, the way that they adapted it was very clever, because there's a couple things they do differently in the book, such as it takes place over a much longer period of time, and so you get to know the characters even more, but the movie's already 2.5 hours long, almost. Like, you just, realistically, you can't do that to a modern audience. So the ways in which they cut corners, quote-unquote, and made it fit into that allotted screen time, I thought they were very clever in the choices that they made because they kept so much character development. Yeah. You know, the subplot about the priest, it's kind of hard to weave those things in because there was a bit more about that in the book. And then also, as I remember in the book, there was a very specific moment where she becomes possessed, and in this you don't get, you're not sure.
Yeah.
He you kind of see it come in and out of her, and then he's fully possesses her.
Yeah.
As opposed to, bleep, this is the moment the demon comes in like a genie or something. So, but clever choices for the film, in my opinion. So yeah, it is so well done. So yeah. Five
absolute five. Everything about it.
Easy five.
Perfect to me.
And this won't change by the end, but I do have more to say about certain things, but there are spoilers ahead, so.
Yes.
So should we get into it?
Yeah, let's go.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
I always forget that it starts in a desert in Iraq.
Yeah, we're in
I don't know why.
We're an archaeological dig in northern Iraq.
Yes. And, you know, you're introduced to the character of Father Marin, and sort of weird things start happening. They find what I know as Pazuzu, which
yes,
that's just because I've looked it up. They never mention that name in the film. They do mention it in the book, I think. But yeah, so Pazuzu is in, I think, an Iraqi or like a demon that exists as part of that culture. Because they find an ancient demon. So in the dig, they unearth a medallion of St. Joseph and an artifact representing Pazuzu, an ancient demon. Yeah, so then you kind of notice things are happening. So he's very shaky, and he has to take pills. So you can tell something's... He's definitely older, and... Yeah, you could just tell.
Yeah, he's very old, and, yeah, he's, like, taking these pills, and you have this kid runs up to him, he's like, oh, they found something.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, and, yeah, they find, like, coins, and they find that, yeah, the...
A medallion.
Mm-hmm. I think, sorry, this is not of the same period.
No, it's not, yeah. It's
the
true.
Other things.
And then they find the Pazuzu.
Yeah, he, like, puts his hands in this hole. And I'm like, I would not be doing that. There could be, like, all kinds of poisonous things in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he pulls out this idol of Pazuzu.
Yes, which is a little, like, demon head carving, basically. An artifact. And, yeah, you just have all these kind of signs, like the ticking of the clock. He almost gets run over by, like, a horse and carriage, looks like, or a horse and cart. And then you have the statue of Pazuzu and dogs fighting in front of it. It's just kind of a lot of negative or bad omens.
Yeah, you've got,
seems.
Like, a lot of bad... vibes here, like,
yeah.
This is not a safe, pleasant experience.
Right, and so that's pretty much it. Then you exit that scene and you go into, they're in Georgetown, Washington, and Ellen Bernstein plays Chris, who is kind of a big deal. She's an actress.
Yeah, she's a movie star.
And you kind of see Father Karras in the crowd as she's acting.
Yeah, so we first meet her in her house, and she hears, like, weird noises in the attic. And she's talking to...
Carl.
Is he, like, out?
So it's Carl and Sharon, and they seem to be... Carl's kind of, like, the maintenance guy or house... Sharon's more domestic housekeeping, and Carl is... He's, like, the handyman.
Yeah.
You know? But live and help. She has live and help, basically.
And
she's fancy.
And she's asking Carl to get some traps because she thinks there's rats in the roof. And he's like, no, there's no rats there.
Yeah.
She's like, just get some traps.
Just do what I say, Carl.
Yeah, and then we see her, yeah, on the set of her movie, and she's like in a, it's like a college campus.
It's like a protest.
Yeah, there's like a protest happening, and we meet, well, we see Father Karras.
In the crowd. We don't know who he is yet, but for those of us who've seen the movie a million times...
We know.
Like, oh, this Father Karras. He's enjoying the being on set for the movie.
Yeah.
And you realize also the director is Burke Dennings. He's a famous director and a good friend of Chris's.
Yes. And then we have them, like, walking home, and we hear tubular bells.
I love some tubular bells.
You're going to insert tubular bells inside.
Insert tubular bells here. But yeah, it's Halloween and there's kids running around in costumes, and that also kind of sets the autumn, you know, upstate New England vibe, which I love. And so then she comes home and you're introduced to Reagan.
She's so sweet.
Reagan's
12.
She's adorable.
And yeah, she's just really, really sweet. And she starts, like, play fighting with Chris, and they've just got you can tell they've got, like, a really good relationship.
A really playful, loving, affectionate relationship.
And Reagan starts talking about how she's been somewhere and there were horses, and she got to see a beautiful grey gelding, and she really wants her own horse. And Chris is like, well, you know, maybe when we move.
Yeah, because I'm a movie star, I can get you a horse.
Mm-hmm.
What is a gelding?
It is a male horse that has been cut.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. You're so knowledgeable about, like, farm things.
Well, I was horse obsessed.
Oh, okay.
For a long time.
So what's it called when a female is fixed? What's that called? It
doesn't happen.
Oh, I see. And then a mare is just a girl.
A mare is a female horse. So you have a mare is a female horse. You have a stallion who is an uncut male.
Mm-hmm.
A gelding is a cut male. And then the babies are foals. If it's a male foal, it's a colt. If it's a female foal, it's a filly.
Look at you with all the horse terminology.
Dropping some horse knowledge on you.
Thank you. Horse queen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now that we've ironed that out,
yep.
You go to a scene with Karis and his mama, his Italian Catholic mama, who she calls him Dimmi.
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 Short for Damien. Dimmi.
Dimmi.
And you have a little bit of their relationship, which is, it seems that she's not very well, and he's kind of her primary caretaker.
Yeah.
But that they're very close.
Yeah, and, like, his uncle's there, and his uncle is basically like, look, she needs to go into a home.
Yeah,
and Karis is like, no, I'm not putting her in a home. Like,
I'll look after her.
Yeah.
And then you cut back to Regan and Chris, and this is where they get the Ouija board out.
Yeah, she's found a spirit board.
A spirit board. I have a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
I had it from when I was a kid in America. I brought it with me.
We've played it.
We have. So she talks about her friend, Captain Howdy.
Captain Howdy.
And she's just kind of asking some questions like, Captain Howdy, do you think my mom's pretty?
Yeah, she's like, I asked the, because Chris is like, how does it work? How do you talk to him? She's like, oh, I asked the questions and he has the answers.
It's cute.
It's very cute.
And seemingly very innocent. And then you kind of have Chris putting Regan to bed.
Yeah,
she's... And you just see that she's just a sweet kid. And again, just really reinforcing their relationship, which is very clever and very smart. A good thing to do in movies that very often nowadays they leave out is, like, kind of showing where something was so that you have room to change it.
Yeah.
So that you can see how far she goes from the end to where she was at the beginning. That makes it all the more upsetting. Yeah, and it's, again, it's fully character-driven. And so it's so great that you get this time with them because you like Regan.
Yeah.
So you root for her later. Like, she's this sweet little 12-year-old kid, like...
And she is really lovely, like...
Super innocent, very naive, like... So it really puts everything at odds later on when you contrast, like, the two Regans. I mean, and because you're questioning the possession, right? Like, the movie wants you to question that. So, yeah, anyway. So then you have a scene where you show a priest coming in the morning into a church... And seeing that the Mary statue has been desecrated, it's got, like, fake boobs and...
Yeah, it's, like, covered in blood. But before that, we have...
Father Karis in the bar.
Yeah, so we've got Father Karis is in the bar, because I'm just going down, Father Karis loves beer.
He loves beer, and he also loves Chivas Regal.
Yes. He likes to drink, and he's basically talking about the fact that he's, you know, he's lost his faith.
He's talking to Father Dyer, who's his, like, best friend priest.
Yeah.
And
he's like, I need out, I'm unfit, I've lost my faith. And then the next scene we're at is, like, Regan on her birthday, and you find out that her dad is a bit of a loser, and...
Oh, yeah, not really in her life.
Yeah, and hasn't called her on her
Chris
birthday.
Chris on the phone trying to get a hold of him, like, it's his daughter's birthday.
Yeah. So at this point, we know this is, you know, we're not going to see the dad in this film at all.
Mm-mm.
And she goes to bed and she wakes up to Regan in her bed. And she's like, oh, did you have a nightmare? She's like, no, my bed was shaking. And there's a weird noise in the attic. So Chris goes up there. And this for me is always, I remember the first time I watched this film, like this scene, like being the first one where I was really, really scared. Mm. Where Chris goes up into the attic and she's there with the light.
Yeah.
And just the music, there's just so much tension.
And if you think about how slow this progression is,
from
rats in the attic to, like, full-blown levitation, I mean, it's I love it. I love watching it unfold and just wondering where it's going to go. Because I always, when I enter this world again, despite having been there many times and seen it many times, I always try to watch it with fresh eyes, like, to be in that moment like I was when I first saw it.
Yeah.
It is just incredibly effective. So, yeah, so then, because this is where I jumped around a little bit, my notes jump around. So, after she's been in the attic.
That's when we go to the priest, bringing the flowers into the church and yeah, the
and seeing the desecration.
Yeah, okay. It's been desecrated.
And then it's Chris is having a party, right?
The next bit is we kind of find out that Father Caras's mother is now in some sort of like hospital ward.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand this scene because she's in something's happened to her and her brother, Caras's uncle's taken her in by the looks of it. But it's like she's on a mental ward.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but isn't she just old?
The feeling I got is that they put her in the mental ward because of her lack of English.
Yeah.
Because it is a very big thing in the book, more so than the film, but in the film as well, that they are immigrants. Like, he's an immigrant priest. His mother is an immigrant from Italy. She doesn't speak a ton of English. He has to translate for her. She listens to Italian music on the radio. Like, she doesn't have those skills. So probably back in the 70s before patient welfare yeah. and things like that, they probably, she couldn't articulate what was going on. Maybe she got frustrated and upset and they put her on the mental health ward. So I think that's how that came yeah, about. But yeah, it's not super clear, but that's what I think.
Yeah. And he's obviously very upset that she's in there. And then we go to the party at Chris's house.
Yes. And then here we are. She's having a little get-together for, I think it's like a rap party for the
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, yeah. So the yeah, things. Everyone from the movie, including, I've got him always down as party priest, but Father Dyer.
Yeah.
He's there yes. playing piano.
Well, it's kind of strange. Like, okay, Georgetown, yes, not a huge city, but it seems like they run in this crowd. And how the movie star crowd overlaps with the priest crowd, I'm not exactly sure about.
Same. It's a little bit odd.
Yeah, it's a little odd. But yeah, party priest Dyer is there. And Burke Dennings, the director of the movie, who's English. And he's just very like, darling, it's
yeah,
like
he,
this.
He's a bit like Rod Stewart-esque. Rod Stewart in the 60s-esque.
He strikes
that's
me
the vibe.
As kind of a dandy.
Yeah.
Even the way he dresses with his like beret. And his
yeah.
Stuff. They're all at the party. And
at this point, we should point out, we were watching the original.
Oh, yes. We should have said at the opening. The theatrical cut as yeah. opposed to the longer director's cut.
Yes. Because there are some kind of images when you think of The Exorcist that come into your head and some of them aren't in the version we watched, like Reagan coming down the stairs.
Yes, like, that is definitely worth mentioning, yeah. So that part, and there's a few lengthier conversation scenes yeah. that are cut. I mean, I don't really have a preference. I don't think that her coming backwards on the stairs adds all that much to it.
No.
It's creepy, but it doesn't make or break it for me.
No. So. Exactly.
Yeah. So watching this version was fine. We yeah. actually watched it on an old DVD of mine.
It was. It had like a weird introduction.
It was like really freaking.
Yeah.
Welcome to my DVD. Like very wooden.
It was weird thinking that like how dated a DVD looked.
Well, I think I've had that DVD of The Exorcist because I used to watch it all the time, and I think I've had it since at least 2004 or 2005.
Yeah.
Really old. So yeah, but. You know, when in a pinch, I was glad to have it. Same yeah. with Trailer Park of Terror.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have that on DVD. So,
but yeah, we've got at the party, Chris is talking to Father Dyer. I'm assuming it's because like the priest's school is right next to her house. Because obviously we've seen her walk by and look at all the priests outside.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, who's that priest that looks like such and such? Or, I don't know.
Like a movie star.
Yeah. yeah. And he's like, oh, that just happens to be my best priest buddy, Father Caras.
They have such a nice little bromance.
They do. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, he's our psychiatrist. And he's like, oh, it's really sad. His mother died this week. She was home alone, and I guess she was living alone, and I guess no one found her for a while. So we know now that Father Caras's mother has returned home from hospital. She's died. And hasn't been found for a while, so
swift bit of exposition, but yeah. yes, yeah. And so then they decide to have a sing song. I believe it is Father Dyer who's yeah. playing the piano. So in the midst of this, Reagan has obviously gone to bed earlier. She's only 12, and she comes wandering out, and she points to one of the guys that he's going into space. I think he's an astronaut, and she says, "You're gonna die up there." And then she pees on the floor. And it's very disturbing because she's this little girl that just, it's just so out of character. And she's 12. And
yeah.
it seems very deliberate that she's pissing on the ground. And Chris obviously is very shooken up. And
yeah,
she says,
and she runs up to her. She's like, Reagan, like, baby? And it's like shaking her and she's still just like staring off.
And she says to the guests, like, I think it's just nerves. And
oh, no, she's like, oh, she hasn't been well.
She hasn't been well.
Yeah, I'm sorry, she hasn't been well.
It's nerves. I don't know why I have that in my notes. But then, like, then you see Chris, like, giving her a bath, like, sponging her in the bathtub. And
yeah, that's when we find out about the nerve scene, because, yeah, she's like, Chris is, like, giving her a sponge, like, washing her in the bath. And Reagan's like, mother. I find it weird that she calls her mother. Mother?
Yeah.
Mother?
It's a little weird. I never called my mom mother.
No. But, yeah, she's like, mother, what's wrong with me? And she's like, oh, nothing's wrong with you. It's just what the doctor says. It's just nerves. Keep taking your pills.
Yeah. So then, but Chris decides to start getting her some tests done.
Well, she goes to bed after this, and Chris just settles down, and then she hears screaming. She runs back in, and, like, the bed's bouncing.
Oh, yeah.
And Reagan's, like, yeah, screaming. And, yeah, the bed's bouncing all over the place. And we go back to Father Dyer and Father Karras, and, like, they're drinking together in Karras's room. Karras is obviously quite drunk, and he's just basically admits that he feels really guilty about the death of his mother. Like, he should have been able to do more. Like, he's carrying a lot of guilt.
A lot of
guilt.
And
he was already losing his faith, so he's, like, really struggling now.
And it's really nice to see this kind of male friendship, because it is very loving, actually. And Father Dyer kind of, you can see he kind of gets him drunk, because he asks him, he's like, how do you afford the shivis?
Yeah.
And so then they get drunk, and he puts Father Karras to bed, basically. And then Father Karras has a dream. Kind of really a nightmare.
Yeah.
But it's about his mom kind of in the subway and how he can't reach her. He's calling out to her. It's all silent.
And you see like a flash of like a demon face.
A demon, yeah. Just one flash, super quick. But yeah, he can't reach his mom. And then it kind of shows him the next morning preaching to his congregation. And he's just looking very distracted. But yeah, and then you switch over to Chris doing these tests. She's having tests done on Reagan to try and find out what's going on. And they even... Yeah, it's true, because they kind of start talking about the temporal lobe or whatever, and she's just not having it. She's like, they weren't spasms, the whole bed was moving.
Yeah, and then they say, oh, the problem with your daughter isn't her bed, it's her brain.
Right.
Ew. And then, like, as she's pointing out, because they do, like, these horrific, horrific tests on her. Like, there's one where they, like, put a needle in her neck and all the blood squirts out, and then they're doing all kinds of like spinal taps. And
the only reason I can think that they leave this in, because it's the one thing that I think maybe they could have cut, is to play up someone's like fear of like, or a medical phobia, basically. Mm-hmm. 70s hospitals and the medicine, it's pretty fucked up, and like the blood spurting out of her neck, it's a lot. It's a lot. And I think anyone who has any kind of needle or doctor medical fears
would struggle
and it would be scary. But as for adding to the plot, and that would be, and it's such a tiny criticism, like, what are you cutting, like, 45 seconds from the film? But yeah, I mean, it's the one part where I think they could have used maybe a little bit more editing.
Yeah, but what I do love at this is at first, and she's like, talks about how it could be like split personality disorder, and the doctors are like, no, I can see why it'd be tempting to turn to psychiatry. Like, she's talking about going to, like, a faith healer.
I know.
Like, it's the 70s. They do not, you know, hold psychiatry in any sort of high regard. And then what I love is throughout the length of the tests that go on for a while, various tests throughout the film, and at first they're like, don't turn to psychiatry. It's obviously, like, a physical thing that we can treat. And then they keep getting proven wrong. And then it's, oh, well, maybe we'll turn to psychiatry. Maybe you should. And after a while, like, they do that and she sees a psychiatrist. And then it's like, maybe you need to turn to a priest.
Nothing's working.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny how they really tried to avoid that, and then that's where they end up going. Yeah. Exactly where they end up going. But yeah, so all of these tests are very distressing. I mean, it's really, obviously she's a little girl and she's not fully possessed yet, and so you see her kind of, it's upsetting.
She gets very upset, you know, when things are happening, when she's being thrown around.
Yeah.
She's...
Oh, that reminds me of another part that they took out of the director's cut, is her kind of like, you know, talking shit to the nurse and, like, leaning on the wall, singing songs under her breath. They cut all of that from this version. But, yeah, I mean, so they leave this particular office and they go home, and then the doctors are called to the house. Like, she calls the doctors because Reagan is convulsing and going up and down in the bed.
Yeah, so they arrive thinking, like, oh, she's just going to be... Did you not give her, like, the pills we gave you? And they're like, yeah, we sedated her. And they go in, and yeah, she's been whipped up and down. And they had her in, like, a brace for this. And it really hurt her. Like, it really damaged Linda Blair. Like,
I can't imagine.
Because, yeah, this machine's, like, whipping her backwards and forwards and being thrown around.
it looked horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so she, and then she's screaming out, fuck me, the so is mine. And she hits the doctor.
That's, yeah, she hits the doctor.
And then you can see the possession come in quickly, but then leave her. And it's really, that's the first time you see whoever, we learn it's the devil, but fully take over her body and then leaves it. And yeah, this I actually think works really, really well too, that you kind of see the devil kind of coming in and out of her.
Yeah.
And it helps build that progression. And also the terror she must feel by losing control.
Yeah, like she's absolutely terrified and she's screaming like, mother, mother.
Yeah, help me, yeah.
Help me. And I like Ellen, what's her name?
Bernstein.
Her, yeah, acting in this scene, like whenever she's watching any scene where she's having to watch Regan get treated like this, just, it's horrible.
She just looks horrified.
At one point, yeah, I can't remember if it's this bit or later, but Sharon, the like helper, has to like drag her out of the room.
Yeah.
While they're like holding her down to sedate her.
Yes.
And just, mm, yeah.
So they heavily sedate her. And the doctor's like talking about lesions and temporal lobes, and she's still not having it, which I really appreciate. She's like, you really think this is a physical, like, medical issue? And so Chris comes home and I can't remember what she's doing, unloading groceries, something like that, and the lights kind of go out. So then she wanders upstairs because she's concerned about Regan, and it's getting colder and colder as she's walking up the stairs, and she sees that the window is wide open
in Regan's bedroom.
It's freezing in the bed, so yeah, she kind of covers her up, and she's angry, you know,
she's left Sharon in charge.
Sharon's meant to be there watching her daughter.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
angry with the help. So she leaves, bumps into Sharon, who's come back because she was picking up her Thorazine.
Her Thorazine to keep Regan comfortable.
And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I left Burke with Regan. I asked if you could just watch her for a few minutes. I could just run and pick up her medicine. And then just then we get another guy. Who comes and tells her the news? Is it Dyer?
No, it's one of the guys from the film.
Yeah, it's one guy.
And
arrives at the house and is like, oh, I guess you've heard the news. And she's like, no, what news? And he's like, Burke's dead.
Yeah, so he must have been drunk and he fell down the stairs and died.
And died, yeah.
And the stairs on the street, just around the corner from here.
Yep, just around the corner. And then you have this, again, a really fantastic reaction from Ellen Bernstein. Just, she turns to face the wall and she like screams.
Yeah, and she's like, no,
just
no.
Just super emotional.
Yeah.
It's really, really well done. Like, my heart just kind of breaks for her because she's already dealing with so much and I just couldn't imagine. So,
and you do see that she is quite close with him, with, yeah, with her director. Like, they are friends.
Oh yeah, definitely. So then the next resort that she takes is to take Regan to a psychiatrist, really to a hypnotist.
Yeah, it's like a hypnotist that she goes to. And you have this, I love this scene where you've just got Linda Blair just like sat like slumped.
Yeah.
Staring, talking this just amazingly soft,
like, yeah, deadpan voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good. He's like, oh, am I talking to Regan? And she's like, yeah. It's like, how old are you? I'm 12. And they're just talking. And then she's like, is there somebody else there? She's like, sometimes. And then do they ask, or is it Captain Howdy?
No, I don't know if they ask if it's Captain Howdy, but she starts kind of growling.
Yeah, and then he wants to speak. He's like, I want to speak to
the person
Regan. Inside of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are also hypnotized.
Yeah. That demon saying, like, no, I'm not. So, and also when she's growling and kind of becomes possessed momentarily, she opens her mouth and everyone steps back and covers their,
yeah, like, she's got like, the worst breath.
Like,
demon breath.
Dead demon breath.
Yeah.
Yikes. So, then she grabs, I don't know if she bit him or grabbed his dick or what she did, but she assaults the psychiatrist, essentially. Yep.
Like, fucks him up.
I was a little confused there, but yeah, it's dramatic. Like, then they have to try and prize her off.
Yeah,
him.
And
they're
like, she's screaming.
And Chris is, of course, reacting, just horrified.
And then we change films.
And then it's time. Excuse me. And then it's time for Rocky.
Yep, now we're in Rocky.
We've got boxing.
A kind of dark-haired Italian-American man.
Wearing jogging. A full grey tracksuit.
Yep, jogging.
Punching the air as he runs. No, he's not. But he's in.
And he meets the policeman, whose name I don't know.
Detective Davenport?
Maybe.
Something like this.
Detective D.
Detective D.
Detective D, he wants to talk to the father because he thinks there is a link between the church desecration and the death of the director, Burke.
Yeah, he's essentially investigating the death of Burke. And yes, he's linked it to the desecration of the church, and he's keen to speak to a psychiatrist, right?
Yeah.
Like, basically.
But then he wanted someone, because he thinks that it might be someone with a grudge against the church who's into black magic or witchcraft. So he kind of says, oh, do you think it could be any of the, you know, the students here, like, at priest school?
Mm.
And he's trying to get Father Karras to say, oh yeah, it could be this guy. And he's like, no, if they told me, you know, anything, like, it's in confidence. And so there's a bit of, like, I quite like the banter between these two at this point.
Me too. They have a total bromance as
yeah.
well. And they,
it's a bit of, like, flirting.
He wants to go see movies with
him. Yeah, he even asks him out.
It is really cute. And it's, yeah, he is flirting with him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd flirt with Father Karras too.
Yeah.
He's got that vibe going on. So
that tortured Italian-American Catholic priest vibe.
Yes, it's the tortured part of it that mm-hmm. does it for me.
The Catholic guilt.
With a taste for Seamus Regal. That's my man. So back to Chris, and she's talking to the doctors, and she's really letting them have it now. But they basically eventually, finally suggest an exorcism, and they suggest it in a way that it's almost like a placebo effect. Like, oh, are you guys religious by any chance? Because maybe if she believes she's getting an exorcist, she'll feel better. They never, the doctors don't ever really suggest it with any real sincerity.
I think they just want to give her an option so that she gets off their back, basically.
Yeah, because she was really letting them have it. And then we cut scene, and the next one is that the detective, and I find this scene very chilling. The detective is looking around the stairs where Burke fell.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to piece it together, like, how it could happen the way that it did, because one of the things that he reveals is that, to the priest, is that the head of Burke was all the way turned around.
Yeah.
And what he gets at, and we learn it a little bit later, which we'll say in a sec, but that he thinks somebody killed him first and then pushed him out the window.
Yeah.
So,
and it was out of Reagan's bedroom window.
Exactly. So, yeah. So he goes to visit Chris to ask her some questions about that night.
She's in a bad mood because she's gone to check on Reagan and found, like, a cross under her bed.
Yes, she's cross about the cross.
She is cross about the cross. I'm frequently cross about the cross. I don't know about you.
I only like them upside down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she is cross about the cross, and she's asking the help, who put this cross?
And no one seemed to. So, yeah, the cop comes in, and he's looking at all of, like, Reagan's art, and, like, oh, who's the artist, and things. And basically, she kind of gets the...
He suspects that Reagan pushed Burke.
Yeah, ultimately. He's basically been like, do you think your daughter would remember seeing anyone in the room? And she's like, oh, my daughter's very sick. She's heavily sedated, so she wouldn't have. And he's like, this is when he's like, oh, someone killed him and then pushed him out the window.
Burke was killed, then pushed, he thinks, by a very powerful man.
Yes.
Because the head was turned all the way around the neck was broken.
I think he's trying to imply that maybe Burke was there to molest Reagan, because he keeps being like, oh, are you sure he wasn't in her bedroom? And she said, well, why would he be in the bedroom? And he's
I didn't even get that.
Yeah, okay. I suppose, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking, it's like, does he think maybe he was touching Reagan and, like, the help, you know, like, some of the staff saw and pushed him out the window to protect her?
Oh, okay.
Or
yeah,
maybe Reagan did it, but yeah. At this point, and as he left, he's like, I love it, because the policeman goes, you're a very nice lady.
Yeah.
Chris.
Then he asks her for an autograph.
Yeah, for his daughter. And then when she asks what the daughter's name is, he's like, I lied, it's for me.
It's for me.
He's like, oh,
it's kind of cute.
That film you did, I went to see it 6 times. And she's like, Oh, okay.
That's normal.
And she closes the door, and she kind of, like, puts her head against the door, because at this point you realise that she knows that Reagan's killed him. Like, the realisation hits her.
Yeah, yeah.
She suspects that her daughter has, or whatever's in her daughter, has
killed Burke.
Killed Burke.
So, yeah, so after he leaves, Reagan starts screaming.
Screaming.
And so she goes running up the stairs, and the Carl and Sharon are following her, and she goes into the room, and there's just items flying around like crazy, and she looks over at Reagan, and Reagan is, for lack of a better word, masturbating or sort of stabbing herself in the vagina with a blunt cross, the cross that she found earlier, I think. And it's just, oh,
she's screaming, let Jesus fuck you.
Yeah. She grabs her mom's face, puts it in her puss, and then
screams, lick me, lick me.
Yeah, and then punches her. Chris goes flying. She almost gets crushed by a dresser that Reagan telekinetically pushes after her. And then as Sharon and Carl are running up the stairs shouting for her, she puts a chair in front of the door.
Yeah, the door slams shut and a chair moves in front of it. And her head turns backwards. And you hear Burke's voice say, do you know what she did? Your cunting daughter.
Yeah, and the exact same Burke voice.
Yeah.
And then Chris is just screaming the house down.
Yeah.
And
I think it was this scene, because one of the scenes where Chris gets thrown across the room, because obviously they threw her across the room, but she hit the wall. And she really, like, severely damaged her back.
Fuck.
So you hear her screaming. It's a real scream. Like, she's really in pain.
Yeah. Gosh. Welfare of actor clauses were not yet included in the contract.
Yeah.
It is an extremely disturbing, very relentless scene that is just, you're just blinking, like, what did I just see?
Yeah.
Because then immediately the next scene is, like, Karis meeting Chris in the street. And she's wearing big sunglasses because she's got bruises all over her face. And she just looks crushed. She's just devastated.
She's shaking. She's like, she asks him for a cigarette and she's trembling.
And you know, you're so right. She knows two things. One, Reagan murdered Burke for sure.
Yeah.
And two, this is not psychological. This is not physical. She is possessed.
Yeah. Not a religious person because the doctors ask her, they're like, are you religious? And she says, no. Then he's Reagan. No. So she's talking to Father Karis and she's like asking him things, what he would do in this situation, or if someone admitted to murder, and he said, well, if they were seeing me as a priest, then I'd have to keep it to myself.
But I'd encourage them to turn themselves in,
but I wouldn't turn them in. And she's like, okay, and what if someone wanted to get an exorcism? And he's like, go back to the 16th century.
Yeah, he tries to dissuade her.
Yeah, he's like, they're not, you know... And he doesn't... At this point, he's a non-believer. He's still walking the walk, but...
Agree.
The
faith is gone.
Faith is gone.
And she says, she's like, I need a priest, not a psychiatrist.
Yeah. And she's like, I need you to do this. And he's like, no, the church would require this proof of possession. And things. So she's like, will you at least come and see her? And he's like, as a psychiatrist. And so he's like, please come. So he goes to see her. Her room is like ice. I love the scenes where you see them walking up the stairs and you see their breath.
The breath gets more and more.
It's just...
It's so well done.
It's so well done.
And I have to say as well, this is the part to me where the film is kind of in two parts. So you've almost got like before and after. So before, it's all the build up into her. You get to know her as a non-possessed Reagan, like normal Reagan. And then you see this slow buildup of weird things happening, from sounds in the attic to like Captain Howdy to... And then you have this half where from when the priest goes to see her until the end of the movie, I mean, Reagan is more or less fully possessed the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite part of the film because you really start to pick up some momentum here, because talk about nailing the pacing. So it is very interesting, but still very slow. And here is when it's like that... snowball at the top of the hill that starts to come down.
Yep, gravity takes hold.
Gravity takes hold and that momentum starts to build. And this is it for me. Like, this is the part where the film really gets going.
Yep.
So, yeah, he agrees to come and see Reagan. He goes in, as you said, like, you can see the breath. It's freezing in there.
She's strapped to the bed.
And, I mean, she's almost completely unrecognizable.
Yeah, like, her skin's all weird and she's got cuts.
Sores
and
everywhere.
Sores and her eyes are a bit yellow at this point.
She's got, like, just... stuff around the sides of her mouth and her hair is matted and it doesn't look anything like this sweet little girl from the beginning. And it's really upsetting. It's really upsetting.
Yeah, it's horrible because it's like, how could you look at her and think that it was something psychological? You know,
eyes
have turned yellow. Right. Like, what?
She's growling. Her voice has changed.
Yeah. Like, her head's turned 360 degrees.
Yeah, and in the book it talks about as well, and this is hard to convey in the film, the smell of her.
Yeah.
That she smelled awful, terrible, like rotting flesh.
Yeah.
So he asks to speak to Reagan, and obviously the demon's kind of playing tricks, talking about his mom, and you know, he starts asking questions, trying to test.
Yeah, he doesn't believe, he thinks it's Reagan putting it on at this point.
Yeah, but you're not really getting any compliance. So then he goes back out and he chats to Chris some more, and he sort of says to her, like, there are no experts. There are no experts in this field.
He's trying to say to her, look, like, I asked him who it was. I asked them who it was, and they said it was the devil. That's like saying, you know, Napoleon Bonaparte kind of thing. Like, yeah. That's such like a thing like a psychotic person would say.
Your daughter says she's the devil himself.
Yeah.
Love it.
And
love that line.
And then she's like, he's like, oh, by the way, did you know that my mother died recently? And Chris is like, yes, I'm really sorry. And he's like, well, does Reagan know? And she's like, no, why would she? And why? He's like, oh, no reason. And you can see in his head, because she said something about his mother, but then she has that famous line, you know, your mother is in here with us, father. And he doesn't seem to call her out. And she vomits all over his face. But after, in the conversation afterwards, he's just worried it's going to do her more harm than good. Because, like I said, there are no experts.
Yeah, and Ellen Bernstein and Chris, she says, it can't get any worse than this.
Yeah, it can't get any worse than this.
And she's really earning her Oscar nomination here.
Yeah. I mean,
she's giving it. Thank you, Ellen Bernstein, for being such a fucking badass actress, because she's incredible.
Yeah, so I think he kind of is like, okay, let's try and get some evidence.
I have to say, this film, without the right actress in that role, would never work.
No.
It is absolutely pivotal that you have the correct actress.
Absolutely.
You can achieve all of these emotions, and she just nails it. You wouldn't care. You wouldn't care nearly as much.
No.
You didn't empathize with this little family, with this mom and daughter. Like, yeah, it's Ellen Bernstein just really, she should have won. I wish I knew who won the best actress Oscar that year. But but anyway, yeah. So Paris, she manages essentially to convince him. So he goes back and he decides he's going to get proof.
Yeah.
He's going to go ahead and get the proof to get the permission to do the exorcist. So he goes in with the recording. Tape recorder. And he starts talking to the demon, and he's trying to almost trick the demon a little bit and get him to speak.
When he walks in, there's that brilliant line where she looks up at him and she says, what an excellent day for an exorcism. And he's like, oh, is that what you want?
Yeah.
And she's so like, good. Yeah, it would bring us together. And he's like, what, you and Reagan? And she's like, no, you and us. Yes.
So creepy. So anyway, he kind of starts speaking Latin to her.
He splashes her with holy water.
But we find out it's religious water. And she's kind of speaking French. Le plume de ma tante. Using different voices and languages. And just also, like, bellowing. Making terrible sounds.
Yeah, the noises. There's no way, like, one person could make that noise.
Or a human person could make that. I mean, it's really chilling. And so, is this the part he's recording it? Is this the part when the help me comes? Because I feel like
not
I
quite yet. No.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of skipped around here in my notes.
Yeah, he has it recorded. So the next scene is him, and he's like in like a sound engineering
studio
booth. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's playing it to someone, and the guy's like, "Oh, it is a language." And he's like, "What? What is it?" And she's like, oh, "It's English. It's English in reverse." So he rewinds it, and you hear it saying, "I'm no one. I'm no one. Let her die." Merrin, let her die. And then, it's just, I'm no one.
It's really
creepy.
He
gets the call at this point, and it's a call to go back to the house. So he rushes back to the house, and Sharon opens Reagan's top. And she's, like, asleep by the looks of it. But on her stomach, you see something appearing, and these welts, like, appear.
Rise up with the words, help me.
Help
and
me.
And it becomes more and more clear. And even the writing of it looks like a child's handwriting.
Yeah.
Like, help me. Yeah, it's very, very creepy, very scary. And again, just everyone's reactions are so on point. So he goes back to talk to, I call them the boss priests.
Yeah.
I don't know who they are. They're higher up in the chain of commands, like he's kissing rings. So he goes to speak to them, and he's showing them the recordings, and they start kind of saying, like, okay, if you think it will help, we'll bring someone in with a little more experience.
Yeah, so they want him there because he's a psychiatrist. Like, he wants to do it, and they're like, no, let's get someone else in.
But call in Father Merrin because he has experience.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, oh, I thought he was in on a dig somewhere. Oh, I read that he was in Iraq, and so he's been back for a couple of months now. He's in Woodstock writing a new book.
Yes.
So we know that that's what he's been doing since he returned.
And that's the first time you kind of, at least for me, and in the film, piece together this person at the beginning, seemingly unrelated to all this, and who Father Marin is. Father Marin has experience in Africa with an exorcism. He's one of the only living priests who does.
Yeah.
So they bring in Father Marin, and I love that scene too, because then you skip to a different convent or wherever Father Marin is, and he gets like a messenger arrive, and he reads the letter, and he's so resigned.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's been waiting. He's been waiting for this. He's seen all the omens. He's seen all the signs. He knows what's going on.
Like, and he knows that
the demon's coming for him.
Yeah, the demon's coming for him, and he has to, and he can't escape it. He has to go.
So Father Marin rocks up in Georgetown.
Yeah.
It's Father Karras.
We have Karras that very famous shot.
Oh,
like
the shot of him stepping out of the car. And he stands in the light of the street lamp, looking up at the window where the smoke's coming out of it. It's iconic.
So good.
Yeah. So he arrives and he gives a crash course in exorcism.
Yeah, he really does. Like,
he's like, lesson one.
They get into their exorcism suits. They suit up.
Their exorcism clothes.
And he's like, I'll ignore, don't engage with her. Don't, just... he was basically going to be doing the response parts of the...
He's like the first...
Of the prayer.
The first rule of Exorcism Club is don't talk about Exorcism Club.
Yeah.
The second rule is the demon will lie, and then he will mix lies with the truth.
Yeah. And what I love about this scene is that, this demon doesn't hold back. So they walk in, and immediately you're having, stick your cock up her ass, you stupid cocksucker. She's yelling in her demon voice at them.
Yeah, which is great. But also, two excellent lines that we skipped. He also says, when he's giving, his crash course, he says, the attack is psychological, and it's powerful. He's basically saying, don't believe everything he says.
Yeah.
And Father Karras keeps trying to interject. He's like, do you want me to give you any background on... I think there's more than one demon. I think there's three. And he turns around and he's like, no, there's only one.
Yeah.
Crash course over. And then they go in and Regan's like, cocksucker.
Cocksucker, stick it up her ass, you cocksucker.
She starts right in, but the priests start praying, and again, when you talk about the pacing of things, right? Like, you really, again, we're going now. The snowball is rolling down the hill. And, they start praying, and Reg is just kind of pulling faces, waggling her tongue, making noises, grunting.
Karras is just like, what the fuck?
Shaking the bed. Yeah, I wrote, Karras is concerned, Marin undeterred.
Then the bed starts floating.
The bed starts floating, yeah. And Marin's like doing the call and response with the Catholic prayers. And Karras isn't responding because he's just staring in awe.
I love this bit because, it must be really difficult for him because on one hand, he's there as a priest, but he was kind of a priest that wasn't really believing, and now he has got proof that is 100%.
And you can see that sort of crisis of faith is really also quite paramount to the story, because he would not be in the headspace that he's in, and all of that affects the outcome. So, so you've got Karras just in absolute shock, and then Regan pukes green. Again. She's got green puke everywhere, and she's truly vile by now. I mean, she looks like a monster.
Yeah, there is absolutely,
there's almost nothing left of Regan.
No.
And he starts saying, I cast you out.
I cast you out!
And as he's shouting this, she, or the demon inside her, starts breaking. The ceiling cracks. The doors are cracking. Everything's breaking open.
Yeah, her head, again, does a full 360.
Yeah, her entire head spins around. And the sound effects for this, it's like cracking bones.
Yeah. It's horrible. And then she floats up into the air.
Yes, she levitates as she's laying down.
Yeah, and cuts are appearing on her, whiplashes.
Well, because when he's putting holy water on her, and as he's shaking the water on her, appears on her leg gashes. And, of course, here's where we start the famous line from the film. The power of Christ compels you. And they repeat times 1,000,000.
Until she stops floating. And then Karras Karras ties her hands up, but then gets knocked down.
Well, she uses her hands tied together to, hit the shit out of him. And she's reacting. There's this kind of moment where it's her silhouette in the window, and
she's all contorted and I'm melting,
and you see, and it's you can see again with this backlighting and the mist, and then you see a flash of the Pazuzu statue flashes up. I think it's rather a weird shot that almost feels like it doesn't belong in the same film.
Yeah, it is very strange.
It's super strange. And I also wonder if effects like were a little bit better and smoother like they are now, if it would read better. But it doesn't even matter. It's so unsettling and frightening. And so then they kind of leave her to rest.
Yeah,
before they start again.
I love that it's like, oh, let's have a rest before we start again. And Kara's just so like,
whoa.
Yeah. Whoa, again?
I love that they're like, time out, we need a time
He's
out.
He's so traumatized.
Freeze time out.
Yeah. And so, but then he goes into the room. And now Pazuzu is speaking to him in his mother's voice.
He's
Dimmy. Like, Dimmy, please, I'm scared.
It really, really hurts him.
Yeah, at like, first he's like, you're not my mother. But then it really does get to him. He's like,
he's emotional. Yeah. And Marin just tells him to get out, basically.
Yeah, Marin's like, look, you can't do this. You're like compromised. Get out.
Yeah.
So he
carries on alone.
Yeah, he like, you know, kisses his thing and puts it on.
Blessing things. Puts a cross. And then he kneels next to her to pray, and he starts saying the Our Father in heaven prayer.
And then we go to Karis, who is just sat outside the room looking just
got like his head in his hands, just resting. And then Chris comes to speak with him briefly. And I really think that she's just absolutely distraught, and she asks him, is Reagan going to die?
Yes, because he'd checked her heartbeat and he was like, her heart's going to go.
Yeah. But he gathers himself and he's like, No, she's not going to die. And he says it, like, really resolutely. Almost like he refinds his faith in this moment.
Yeah, and I think he has, and he knows what he needs to do.
Yes, and he makes a decision. You see it in his face, and he goes back in, and Marin is dead. This is another thing. I almost kind of wished we got to see it, but again, we don't really need to. His heart was really fragile.
Yeah.
You know, and so as he's trying to revive, Karis is trying to revive Marin, Reagan is kind of, like, giggling. At it, and so finally Karis loses his shit and he just grabs her and they start fighting, like they're grappling with each other.
He's like hitting her and like
punching her in the face.
He's like punching her, and then immediately he pretty much starts to shout, take me instead, come into me. And we see suddenly his face change into like the demon face for a second and it disappears, and it's like he's fighting it. And then you get a point of view shot because we can hear Reagan like screaming at this point on the floor, like she's back in charge of her body. And she's like screaming,
and
like mother,
everything.
The voice changes, and you see him, you see Karis looking down, and it's he's got like the hands like he's going to throttle her still, and his face keeps changing, and he's like, no, and he runs and throws himself through the window, out the window, and down the steps.
Yeah, it's almost like the demon couldn't resist, because it was a priest.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, this is what he said to him, like, earlier on, you know, I hope we do have an exorcism. It will bring you to us. The demon, that was the demon's plan, I think. The demon's plan all along was to kill the priests.
That's such a good point, yeah. So but he manages to kind of master himself enough to not hurt Reagan. And he overcomes the demon enough, like you said, to just throw himself out the window, down the death stairs. And then almost immediately there's like police and crowds gathering. And you see also his pastor friend, Father Dyer shows up and basically asks him, giving him his last rites.
Yeah, he's like holding his hand. He's like, do you want to give your last confession? And he can't, you know,
he's fucked.
And all he can do is move his fingers to say yes. So that's how he responds. So
he's given his final rites and he finds his faith just as he dies.
Yep.
And then, you've got Reagan, like you said, she's crying like a normal kid. And Chris finally embraces her, and that's really interesting too, because Chris is afraid.
Chris is hesitant at first. She's very hesitant. She thinks a trick.
Yeah, she still doesn't think it's Reagan, and that's heartbreaking to watch too. Yeah. And I don't remember when it happened. The detective showed up, and maybe it doesn't matter, but it's like when Chris runs in, the detective is there.
He knocks on the door just as it's all.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, and that's pretty much. You cut from that scene to they're packing and.
It's moving out day.
Yeah. Chris is giving Sharon some final kind of orders or
decisions. And they find the coin, the pendant.
So it's Saint Joseph. So I looked this up before the episode because St. Joseph is the patron saint of families and immigrants and, like, relationships between moms and dads. So I thought that was interesting. Mm. So, yeah. So she found the St. Joseph necklace in Regan's room and gives it to her. And then Father Dyer shows up at the end and him and Chris talk. And Chris kind of reveals that Regan doesn't...
Yeah, Regan doesn't remember any of it. And she, she doesn't know who he is. Mm-mm. Even though he wasn't that involved anyway, like, she doesn't know who he is. And she comes out and you can see, like, all these, like, marks on her face are fading. Like, all these, like, cuts and things are fading on her face.
She looks significantly more normal.
Yeah. And she doesn't remember any of it. But then, as she goes, she has to run back and give the priest, like, a kiss.
Yeah. Well, no, so,
she gives him, like, a little kiss on the cheek. Him. Yeah. And it's, like, so somewhere she knows that the, you know, priest saved her.
Helped her, yeah. And then, as they're pulling away in the car, Chris stops the car and gives Father Dyer the necklace that belonged to Father Karras, the St. Joseph medallion. And then Father Dyer stops to look at the death stairs.
Yeah, morbid much.
We get some more tubular bells before before the end of the movie. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's just a perfect horror film.
It really is so good. Yeah.
So good.
And even the tiny little sort of nitpicky things you mentioned are so small and so significant because overwhelmingly you have this massive payoff at the end. It's so conclusive and satisfying. I mean, yeah, I just wrote here in my notes, so like five crucifixes. Yeah. The way that the director frames certain shots, almost lovingly, it creates really beautiful, vivid, powerful images, like not just the priest getting out of the car, but like the weird convulsing movements where she's levitating. He shoots them almost completely symmetrically, so you'll see it from one person's perspective and then you get a shot that's not anybody's perspective, just for you as the audience, this levitating girl, or like her, to help me on her stomach, like he just frames things so well. It's so aesthetically pleasing to the eye, which is really almost jarring considering you're watching. Like, it's a juxtaposition, right? Here's this beautiful frame of this really fucked up scene happening. But there's something about that that's so, it just lives with you. I mean, there are reasons that there are scenes from this movie that are just completely, you know, seared into people's memories.
Yeah. And the thing is as well, you know, this film dared to go where nobody ever wants to go. Everyone's too scared. Like, this, you know, there are plenty of possession films.
Mm.
But how many of them are so... Everything that this demon kind of does to her in some way is sexual. And she's 12, and they do not hold back.
No.
They have her, you know, yeah, like, hacking at her own vagina with a crucifix. And, like, screaming, like, fuck me. Fuck her in the asshole.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just very aggressive. And it's a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah,
I can't think of a single other film that's kind of...
Mm-mm. And they do it in a way that it doesn't come off as, like, shock value.
No.
Like, this is a demon. This is things that a demon would say. And a demon would try to use her body like that.
Exactly. It shows how it's almost like, you know, the people without faith are just animals. You know, they're like, it doesn't matter, they're just livestock, so their bodies can just be carved up or used. And then it's only once they have their faith back that they are worthy.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because, you know, he calls it like, oh, the sow is mine. Like,
it's just a vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just meat. It's like an animal.
Yeah. I mean, the music is unimposing, but elevates it. You could do this movie without any music and it would be fine.
Yeah.
So the music that they do put, I just feel like it's quite minimal, super effective. You have hardly any blood or gore, also not required, you know, a couple of deaths, but it's the character development and how much you care about them, and that you care about Regan and Chris, you care about Father Karras. It's a build-up, the slow burn, perfectly executed. The ending is, as I said, that it is conclusive. You get, like, a final.
Yep.
You know how it ends. You know how everybody's story ends.
Yep.
As far as this movie is concerned.
Exactly.
And most important of all, to me, it's scary.
It's so scary. The scares in this film are perfect. And they're so, because they're not all the same. There's so many different kinds of scares. You have, you know, the kind of almost like jump scare-esque when she's in the attic turning on the light and you're just waiting for something to jump out at her. You have the kind of psychological fear of something unknown being wrong, like you don't know what's happening in this person's body.
Well, or that it happens to yourself.
Yeah.
And you don't have control over your own body, or something otherworldly has taken over.
Yeah.
Where do you go? Like when he says she's in here with us, like that part. Ooh. Yeah. And also that it is a supernatural thing, and you question your own, whether or not you believe in your own faith and things. Like, I'm an atheist, but exorcism movies scare the shit out of me. Almost like, I don't necessarily believe in God or heaven, but I believe in the devil and hell. And I'm scared of it, you know? But, yeah, it's so effective in that way.
Yeah.
Just making you question all those things and think about what this could happen to me. And
like, I've just watched that, and I couldn't tell you how many times I've watched that film now, but I've watched it, and I'm still, like, yeah, that's my favorite horror film.
That's your number one?
Yeah.
It's definitely in my top three, for sure. Yeah. So, if for somehow you've made it to the end of this episode and a year of being with us here at Let's Watch Scary Movies and you've never watched The Exorcist, please, run, don't walk. Go and watch it.
Go and watch it. It's one of these films as well that has a lot of legend and lore about it. There's a lot, a bit like Poltergeist, there's been a lot of things, but it is the only horror film to have its own legitimate serial killer as a member of the cast.
Yes, Jenny was telling me about
that. Yeah, so his name was Paul Bateson. He was a radiology technician at the hospital, and when they filmed at the hospital, they asked the staff to be extras, basically, in the scene. So he's in the scene, playing himself, basically, playing a radiology technician. Later on, he was convicted for murdering a man in New York City, and once in jail, he had confessed to killing and dismembering 6 other men.
Wow.
There was a fire on set, the entire set burnt down, but the only thing that was untouched was Reagan's bedroom.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yep.
The whole set, so what did they have to rebuild
the whole thing? I think it was at the end, once they'd finished filming.
Oh my god.
The whole set burnt down, the only thing that survived, and it was completely untouched, was the set for Reagan's bedroom.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there were, I think, something like 9 people from the, like, attached to the film died within, like, a period of time around filming and release date. So, yeah.
All this to say, at the end of it came a great film.
All of that.
That really did change the way people looked at horror.
Yes.
I feel like it's really worth mentioning that it gave it that sort of, it was the first, so it paved the way to where we can view horror movies not just as like camp, fun, entertainment, but that it can be something deeper and can pull incredible performances out of actors as
yeah.
well.
And yeah. I feel like it's one of these, you know, cult films that classic films that has held up. Like it all holds up, really.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm.
It all holds up.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, sometimes you think this film wouldn't work if they all had cell phones, mm-hmm. or this film, you know, that doesn't exist in this.
Well,
it wouldn't matter about technology or what year it was or any of that. Like, the story, because it's so driven, the story is so character driven. I can't say that enough. Like, it makes such a difference when you give a shit.
Yeah, it really does.
And you spend time, you know, quality time with your characters, getting to know them, and it's just more enriching experience, I think, as a viewer when they have these full and complete characters and these full and complete lives, and they really pull you into that world really, really well.
It is. I've said it like 10 times already in this episode, but it's just perfect.
It's perfect. We love you, Exorcist.
It's perfect, Exorcist.
Yeah.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell. I've seen that means, like, what if it was a dyslexicist? Your mother cooks socks in hell.
I love a meme.
Yeah.
An exorcist meme.
A horror meme.
We are a horror meme.
Mm-hmm. We did it.
We did it. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, us.
Thank you as well. We thanked everyone else at the top of the show, but now I would really like to thank you listeners who've stuck with us and, you know.
And any new listeners that have
snuggled on the couch
with us. Yeah.
For this time we spend together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've done good.
So with that, we will leave you. As always, find us online. Rate,
please.
Review, subscribe.
Yeah. Send us messages, suggestions for films.
Brothers Keg, take us out.
Bye.
Bye.